You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Orange and Brown Talk podcast. Dan Lobby here, and I am joined once again for the first time this year by Tim Bielik, Cleveland.com's draft expert, and Lance Reisland, Cleveland.com's film expert. A lot of experts here on this podcast as we bring back our draft pods to get you ready for the NFL draft. Our goal here is to give you names that you should know for the Browns, kind of get some of your questions answered if you have them for a couple of guys who really know the draft inside and out as we barrel towards that, last weekend in April. It's really coming up fast. Tim, it's good to see you again. I know you've been working on some mock drafts and things like that. What have you had going on?
Well, by the time this podcast is done, I have a mock draft that should be out. I'm not sure the exact day as we're recording this on a Tuesday is going to be out. I will just give you a spoiler alert right now. I have the Steelers and Chiefs going receiver, including my man crush, Ladd McConkey, going to the Kansas City Chiefs and not Xavier Worthy. But
okay. Lance, haven't seen you in a while either. I think maybe at the end of this pod you should have a question for us, but if you don't have one today, maybe we can get one.
All right,
as we do a few more of these as we go through, but I just thought of that. But it's good to see you again, Lance.
Absolutely good to be back. Draft time.
Okay, let's get to it. We're going to talk wide receivers and tight ends. We're going to talk pass catchers today to simplify it. Of course, Lance, that probably makes you cringe for me to call tight ends pass catchers, but, you know, just the shorthand of it. That's what we're going to call it. We're going to start with the wide receivers here, and we're going to start with a focus on the Browns. So each of you are going to give us three names, two names and a sleeper. And Tim, let's go ahead and start with you. Give us your first name and what you like about him.
The first name we'll go with is a guy I kind of identified way back in the beginning. That's Jalen Polk from Washington. You know, good size, about 6'2". Kind of got overshadowed a little bit by Roma Dunze and what he did in that Washington offense. But there's a lot to like about Polk. Good size. He's very fluid. And for me, that's a big thing is because I've said before, football's not a straight line game. Got to be able to move in different directions. And I think Polk has an ability to do that. Plus, at that size, not just at that size, but he knows how to use it very well. PFF had him at a contested catch rate this past season of 50%. That tells you he's really good with the jump ball. Not the fastest guy, but I think, you know, there's enough there where we've seen, for example, with the Browns, Deshaun Watson has done well with taller receivers. DeAndre Hopkins comes to mind. If Polk can get near DeAndre Hopkins, I think that makes him good. So going to number two, another tall receiver, maybe more of a pipe dream, because I think he could certainly go top 40. And I wrote about him last week as guys that would be worth me staying at 54 is Keon Coleman from Florida State. This was a guy that I think for a while was considered, you know, the third best receiver in this class behind Marvin Harrison Jr. and Malik Nabers. But he really kind of slid down gradually throughout the season. And, you know, the combine wasn't a good one for him. A 40 time of 4.61 seconds, you know, and obviously, you know, 40 times, you always take that with a grain of salt. And he looked much faster doing the drills than anything else. So I think that you can kind of forgive a few things with that. He's good enough in the open field, and his hands are tremendous. You watch his highlight film, he makes a bunch of great one-handed catches. So there's a lot to like with Keon Coleman. Then my sleeper, I'm going with Bub Means out of Pitt. You know, they're good size of him, 6'1", 212. He had a very nice pro day combine season, you know, a 4.43 40, a 10-yard split of 1.58, a good size 6'1", 212 pounds. You know, just a couple of years of receiver, but had a pretty solid season last year for Pitt, 41 catches, 721 yards, 6 touchdowns. Just kind of a solid day three type of guy. May never be, you know, anything more than kind of a rotational guy. But, you know, if you're looking for another big physical receiver who can win some one-on-one battles, you've got enough size to make plays down the field, maybe you can unearth some production, maybe not as good as Donovan Peoples-Jones production-wise, but if you can get close to that, you know, especially in the sixth round, I mean, that's a good job. And especially, you know, again, size is important for me. Fluidity is important. I think Means has a couple of those things.
Okay, so let's go through these guys here, Lance, that Tim threw out there. Let's go one by one here, and let's start with Jalen Polk, 6'1", 203, and the thing that stands out to me, you know, look, a 4.52, 40, so not blazing fast speed, but the thing that stood out to me as Tim was talking about him was that contested catch ability. We know, you know, I think the DeAndre Hopkins point is a good one. We know how well he worked with him, Amari Cooper. We've seen what he's been able to do with someone who can go up and make contested catches and make plays for him. So when you hear the name Jalen Polk, what do you think?
Well, for me, the contested catches is so important. So in college, you're going to get a lot more separation than you do in the NFL. So you got, if you're not a blazer, you got to be able to make those contested catches in traffic. And that's what he can do. Again, Roma Dunze, I think, is in can be argued as, you know, top one, two, or three guy. But really, really good. Plays longer than he is, even though he is long. I really like him. In terms of, like, you know, you think about the NFL, so many things are done with option routes. He seems really smart in terms of being able to sit in zones. Again, I don't think he's going to run away from anybody. But if you don't run away, you got to be able to make those contested catches. And he's fantastic. I really like his length. You know, some guys are long, but they don't play long. He's a guy who plays long. And there's guys, I think Tim said it best in terms of football speed. For me, that football speed comes the movement skills, right? So to be able to be fluid on his feet. So the guy from Florida State, all these guys, sometimes those 40s, unless you're a 4.2 guy, you know, 4.3 guy, a lot of times those can be overrated because you're a guy who is a stop and start guy, a sudden, a twitchy guy, a guy who can make catches in space. So I like him. This is a super deep. You know, me and Tim have been going back and forth for a couple months now, but this is a super deep receiver draft. You can get a good guy, two, three, fourth round, at least in this draft. So Polk's one of those guys.
So Tim, I want to ask you something else about Polk. I love this site, Mock Draftable. I don't know how often you guys use it. If people out there listening have never looked at it, it basically takes all of a player's measurables that they have, and it compares them to other NFL players and current NFL players. Or not even current, just players that they have in their database. So like Ty Streets is one of the guys that comes up with Jalen Polk. But there is another interesting name on here, Tim, that I think is interesting. And that's a guy by the name of Cedric Tillman that Browns fans, of course, know very well. Is there any concern that there could be too much duplication there with bringing in kind of another big receiver who maybe isn't known for separation, maybe a little too similar to Tillman?
I'm not as concerned because I feel like, you know, the difference between Polk and Tillman is I feel like the offense Tillman came out of at Tennessee, you know, kind of lacked some nuance and some refinement. You kind of saw some of that this season when he kind of had a hard time, you know, adjusting to, you know, being more, you know, regimented in the NFL as far as route discipline and those sorts of things. And that takes time for a player who's not kind of used to those sorts of things. And it felt like Washington's scheme was, you know, a little more, you know, a little less free-flowing. Obviously, they had an outstanding quarterback in Michael Penix Jr., who I think is QB4 in this draft for me, ahead of J.J. McCarthy. And he just knows how to put people in good places with the football. And I thought, you know, with Polk, that movement ability and his ability to create off the catch really stands out to me. And things you wouldn't expect for a guy who maybe doesn't have, you know, the most speed, not the biggest guy, he's not the fastest guy, but, you know, I mean, just another big body to throw out there. You know, Sean Watson loves to take shots. You know, he loves to trust his receivers in one-on-one situations. Another big guy who can go up and get the football. It just creates more competition, and we know Andrew Berry loves competition.
Okay, so moving on to Keon Coleman, and again, putting him into mock draftable, one of the guys that comes up is Cedd Tillman down near the bottom of the list, but he's on the list. Marquez Callaway has come up with both of these guys, which is interesting. And again, this is just measurables. This doesn't necessarily mean anything on Sundays. It's just comparing measurables between guys. But Lance, with Keon Coleman, again, another guy, you're looking at a 4.6 40. A guy that can make the contested catch, the circus catch. What are your thoughts on him?
Well, first of all, listen to Tim. I always love listening to Tim in terms of like where they go and their measurables and the PFF. I love that stuff. And for me, I always try to match that up with the film. So I try to rely on the film and what I see. And Tim said it best in terms of movement skills with Keon Coleman. He's a guy who doesn't run. He's not a blazer. But there's movement skills side to side. There's lateral quickness. There's spatial awareness. There's the ability to move in space. There's understanding zones versus man, where the pressure's coming from, where the pressure's going to come from in a man coverage versus zone coverage. Because remember, if you're in zone, you're in man if that player is in your zone. But that's going to be a different technique as compared to a man technique. So he's a big guy. He's, again, another guy who plays really long. His highlight film is fantastic in terms of catching the ball. I like to call him guys who pluck the ball. Ball is snatched out of the air. It doesn't hit his hands. He goes and gets it, stays away from his body. Again, a guy who runs a 4.6, but he's a guy who runs a 4.6. And what people don't understand is how fast 4.6 is. People are like, oh, 4.6. If you have incredible movement skills, short area quickness, spatial awareness, all those other things, the ability to run routes, lower your body. Some guys are a 4.2, but it takes them 4 or 5 steps to get, to slow it down. He doesn't. He's sudden and twitchy, a big guy. I like him a lot. Obviously, some people, that's why I'm not huge. I want to see the numbers match the film, because he's a guy on film that is really, really good.
Yeah, and I think, if I may for a second, I think what's hurt Coleman through the process, I mean, so many other guys have run fast 40s. Adonai Mitchell, Xavier Worthy set the 40 record time of the combine. Ladd McConkey had a good 40 time. Troy Franklin's a burner. Roman Wilson put up a fast 40. If teams are falling in love with speed, that's why a guy like Coleman could potentially slide down. It comes down to GPS tracking, because like I said, he looked faster in the gauntlet and on the field than he did in the 40.
Okay, and your sleeper already on the all names team, Bub Means, faster. So we're looking at more speed here, a 4.43 40. This again, I always love this site. AJ Brown, one of his top testing comparisons, and AJ Brown has long been one of my favorite receivers in the league. Lance, I just love throwing these sleepers at you to see. Just let's just see how deep you've gone. Tell me what you think about Bub Means.
I do a little bit of work on Bub, and the reason why is because I think he fits into. I really like guys with lower body power, right? So the Browns right now. I really like the guys Tim took in terms of contested catches, vertical threats, things like that. I kind of went with the guys who are a little shorter speed there, but powerful, easy yard guys. So guys who can take bubble screens, jets, option routes, RPOs, and do something with them. So he's the kind of guy, he's really explosive, comes out of I'm a big Narduzzi fan in terms of the ability to practice. Those things are taken for granted. He's a guy who has come out of a huddle. Those things are important. The ability to get in different formation, different personnel groups. And Kyle, a lot of times these spread guys, they're right and left. So he's a guy who's been in multiple offenses. He's been in spread the year before, a couple years ago. So he's done some different things. But again, a guy with lower body power. I think he's a guy who's pretty sudden. I didn't do a ton on him, but I like those guys. All those guys that kind of fit. I went with the guys who were dual receivers, more than just a slot or more than just an outside guy. A guy similar to the guys I have in terms of what he can do with the ball in his hands.
Yeah, and Tim, this is an interesting draft for the Browns, because I think a lot of people do acknowledge that this team still needs help at receiver, but your top three is pretty much set, with Amari Cooper, Jerry Jeudy, and Elijah Moore, however you want to deploy those last two. You're pretty much set at the top of that receiving core, barring injury. So they really can sort of do whatever they want at that position, adding any type of player they want to sort of fit with the system they want to run. So it's really interesting. Like, everything's on the table, I think, for this team.
No question. And that's the way Andrew Berry likes it. I think the term last year that you guys used was need agnostic, and that's kind of where Andrew Berry and the Browns are, you know, not just a receiver, but across the board. And that's kind of why I think, you know, when it comes to this draft, this may be a year where Andrew Berry is not afraid to take a couple more, you know, guys that maybe need a little extra development time. You know, the guys I'd listing, you know, particularly Keon, particularly Polk and Coleman, maybe they don't need as much development, but maybe guys that can more step on the field, you know, compete with Cedric Tillman potentially and David Bell for that fourth and fifth spot at receiver. And again, you know, it's just about competition, getting more young bodies in there and see if you can unearth the gem.
Okay, Lance, you're up. Two receivers and a sleeper.
Well, like I said, my guys kind of fit the mold of being slot guys, heavier guys, thick guys. So I think with the Browns, I think they're not going to change what they do. Everybody wants a big change fundamentally. I think with Nickerson coming in from, you know, his coming from Seattle, but his time with McVay, I think the Browns are going to run more condensed formations. So everybody's looked at the motions and motions, what motions do and how they work and what McVay does. So I think two guys. So the first guy for me is Malachi Corley out of Western Kentucky. And the reason I like him is because his ability to do things with the ball in his hands. Now, here's a guy, again, not a super route tree in terms of detailed routes, being at the top, sitting on routes. But here's a guy, I think when you talk about they have Amari Cooper, they have Jerry Jeudy, they have Elijah Moore. Elijah Moore has been kind of cast into the slot receiver thing where he's going to do the gadget stuff. I think they have Nyheim Hines who's going to do that now more because he can do some real – and he's a really a good receiver outside. But they need a guy who can just touch it and go. So for me, on my call sheet, this is a touch guy. I don't really need him to run great routes. I don't really need him. I need a guy who can get me easy yards, either get a home run or get me to second and four. So Malachi Corey, simply because his yards after catch, he really thick lower body, catches the ball really, really good with his hands, comes from an offense where he was lined up everywhere. He ran the under routes, the over routes, the mesh, smash. He did all the route combinations. So he has a good route tree, but his big plays come from him touching in space, right? Jet sweeps, fly sweeps, option routes, bubble screens, quick screens, things like that. So, and I think he's big enough if he's in the slot, because I think if they go to more 11 personnel, those receivers are going to have some fullback responsibilities. And that's what people don't understand. So they got to have a little bit of girth on him. So he's a guy who, if he's lined up in tight and he's not the motion guy, he can get up on an outside linebacker or get up on a safety. Because one of the things they're going to do, I think, with one of McVay's, you know, traits, in my opinion, is he always leaves corners unblocked. He's blocking linebackers and safety. So, you know, they got to have a little bit more girth to him. So I think he's a guy that can do that. My second guy is Xavier Leggett out of South Carolina. Again, a Deebo Samuel type guy in terms of a big, thick guy who can take the – he's a little bit faster. He's got outstanding straight line speed. But again, a guy who can be in reduced formations, block linebackers because he's big. He can block safeties because he's agile enough. He can run the jet sweeps. He can do that gadget stuff that they try to do with Moore. But that gadget stuff you do with Moore, those are hard to do unless you have some poundage to you, right? So these both guys, the guys are over 200 pounds, very good run after catch. I like his ability just in space. Again, it's not route. You know, they have these guys now, right? So like you guys are saying, they can not only by receiver, but they can take guys who can do things, right? And these two guys can just catch it and make plays. It's not always going to be pretty. The route's not going to be great, but they can do things when they get it. And then my sleeper is Luke McCaffrey. For a simple reason, I think he's a great athlete, right? So he was a quarterback at Nebraska, played receiver at Rice. Very, very talented guy. Obviously has good lineage with it, with the family. But he's a guy who can do different things. Now, when you talk about like a Taysom Hill type of guy, right? So now you're thinking red zone stuff. You can do some different stuff with plus run game if you want to put him at quarterback. I think he's good enough, again, to play inside or outside. He's very football knowledgeable. When you play quarterback, you understand what the quarterback sees. Again, I just think he's a great athlete, and he really hasn't found a home in terms of always being one position. But he's a guy you get late in day three, that could be really productive because of how, first of all, Kevin Stefanski, I think, is real innovative in the red zone. And he gives you another option where you would have to attain for him, and you have to account for him in the red zone. So those are my three guys who could do multiple things, both inside and outside, play the slot, play outside, and guys who – my simple thought is they need guys who can get easy yards so they don't have to go on these 12-play perfect drives all the time.
Tim, I feel like Kevin has been looking – like Kevin Stefanski has been looking for – you know, when Lance talks about a Malachi Corley or really all three of these guys, Malachi Corley, Xavier Leggett, and Luke McCaffrey. He's been looking for this type of player, whether it was what they tried to do with Elijah Moore last year, What they tried it with Jakeem Grant. He's always been looking for this type of player to get the ball in his hands in different ways. Let him create things. It doesn't have to be complicated. It's just get him the football and let him go. And that's sort of the theme I'm hearing in all three of these guys that Lance just threw out there.
Yeah, 100%. I think, you know, the idea, obviously, of, you know, is having a guy you can get the ball to and, you know, have him make one guy miss and, you know, all of a sudden turn a 2 yard gain into 6 or 7 yards is really intriguing. And I'm very pro Malachi Corley along with Lance. I even have PFF's guide to look it up because I had to double check the numbers myself. You know, in the percentiles, this is in the percentiles, you know, great against single coverage. They have it about 90 in the 93rd percentile. And this is what stands out to me, because I feel like with Deshaun Watson, teams are going to play a lot, obviously usually play a lot of zone against mobile quarterbacks like Deshaun Watson. His grade against zone is in the 100th percentile. So that tells you that, you know, he can create space. I mean, just a guy who can be kind of a walking mismatch, because, I mean, there's not a lot of corners that are 210 pounds. I mean, I don't have the weights for the Browns corners, but I can't imagine any of them, you know, are 210, 211 pounds, you know, sub 6 foot. You know, there's all the Debo comparables that are out there with Malachi Corley. If he could be a poor man's Debo, I think that's that would be the move for the Browns. The thing I think with Corley that I would be – that I think would have him there at 54 or after a trade down is kind of the same thing with Cedric Tillman, is, you know, maybe not as much nuance that he had to learn in Western Kentucky. I mean, he did fill a lot of roles, no question about it. But in a lot of ways, he was kind of a gadget player. Even looking at, you know, again, PFF's route data, 28 of his catches last season, so he had 79 catches, 28 of them were screen passes. Now, that's not a bad thing. I mean, obviously, like Lance said, you know, get him touches, you know, just get him the ball out quick. You know, a big 210-pound receiver with, you know, about 4.4-ish speed, there's plenty of reasons to just get him the football and let him do his thing, but you just want to kind of see him build on that. Maybe that's the path for him playing right away, is you get hit, you make him kind of that gimmick player as a rookie, and, you know, as he builds more and more of those complete skills, that's when you really start to grow his role more. Maybe he takes over if Elijah Moore leaves after 2024 in free agency as the slot guy.
Okay, I wanted to talk tight ends. Because I think when you look at sort of the way this roster is built, and Tim, you mentioned it, we've talked about being need agnostic, but every now and again, Andrew Berry will leave a hole. This isn't as big as like when they didn't sign a left tackle a few years ago, and it was pretty obvious they were going to draft a left tackle at number 10. But when you look at this tight end roster, you've got David Njoku, obviously, who I think really finally reached that potential in the second half of last season, and you really saw a guy that could develop into a top level tight end now. After that, Harrison Bryant's gone. You know, he was okay, but he's gone. Jordan Akins is still on the roster. He's a little older. It just feels like tight end is very much in play and could be in play with that first pick that they have in the second round. So I wanted to ask you guys about a couple tight ends you like. So Tim, who are a couple tight ends out there that maybe could be sitting there? Doesn't have to be that second round pick, somewhere in the Browns range where they could end up, who could come in and help this football team.
Well, I'll start, you know, if they were to take this guy at 54, and I think this is more kind of the Sam Laporta effect, you know, what we saw with the Lions last year. They took Laporta, and he was great right off the bat. So maybe this isn't a great tight end class outside of Brock Bowers. He's the only guy that's, you know, a top 50 lock. But, you know, Tre'Davious Sanders from Texas is a really interesting guy for me. You know, this is a year where there's so many great Texas skill players. You talk about, I mentioned Adonai Mitchell, Xavier Worthy, you know, Jonathan Brooks, the running back. He's a guy I really like coming off a torn ACL. Sanders is really the fourth of those guys that can really go in. Of those last two, Brooks and Sanders can go in any order. 6'4", 245, you know, high level skill as a receiver, 600 plus yards receiving his last two seasons. Excellent 40 time, good for a tight end, good shuttle time. And he's just a great, you know, option as a pass catcher. You know, that kind of pseudo slot receiver, you know, the tight end kind of thing. Kind of what people thought David Njoku was going to be kind of earlier in his career before he became a more well-rounded tight end. We know Kevin Stefanski loves to use tight ends, and if you give him another high-level receiving tight end, Jatavion Sanders, it really makes a lot of things interesting. And to go with this, and to go with a sleeper, I'm going to go with a guy that, you know, a Big Ten guy, Theo Johnson, the Canadian tight end, 6'6", 259 pounds, was a monster at the combine. I'm trying to look up the numbers real quick. You know, a 4.5, 7.40, 39.5-inch vertical, 7.153 cone, all these different things. You know, Johnson was a converted receiver. he had a lot. He was a lot of good things to like about, you know, him as far as a prospect's concerned. He's got some rawness to his game, which is why he will have some things to work on, and you can kind of hide him behind David Njoku and Jordan Akins while he continues to kind of work on those assets as far as, you know, a tight end is concerned. But there's a lot to like, you know, again, with the size, you know, production isn't quite there, but he's still a young, raw player, again, you know, just kind of continue to develop. And I think, again, going back to what I was saying earlier, this is a draft where Andrew Berry can afford, I think, to take some projects, and I think Johnson could be a little bit of a developmental too.
And one note here on Jatavion Sanders, the comparison that NFL.com's Lance Zierlein makes for him is David Njoku. So there you go. That fits. Lance, who do you like at tight end?
Well, love Theo Johnson. So the week of the Ohio State-Michigan game, I got a chance to watch all 11 games going into that. And he is a red zone, really a really good red zone tight end in terms of he's not a great route runner in the field necessarily, but he has some pretty good feel down in the red zone in terms of running stick nods and running some corner routes. He does a really nice job, and he plays really, really long, and he looks like a basketball player in the red zone. So I really liked him. For me, it's Browns are going mirror 11 personnel. So this guy has got to kind of went with what's the dual guy going to be? Because Stefanski, again, you run what you know. So there are going to be some fullback responsibilities with the tight ends based on personnel. So a guy I really like, I like Kate Stover. And the reason I like Kate Stover is because, again, I don't think it's a great tight end class, and I think it's more of a scheme fit, right? So he gives you the ability to be an inline tight end and live in personnel like Njoku. So when you talk about the kid out of Texas, what separates Njoku right now is his ability. Njoku can put his hand on the ground next to the tackle and block really, really well, along with split out. And that's what makes Njoku really kind of special right now in terms of when you're in a personnel group, it's hard to play nickel or regular because he gives you both options. But Kay Stover, to me, he's an athlete. He's very, very tough. I still think the Browns need a little bit of attitude on the offense in terms of some of their flanks, right? So they need a guy who's going to come in. He's kind of a no-nonsense guy. He'll do the dirty work. He can kind of do take some stuff over that's now been lost with some tight ends not being with the Browns anymore. So he can run some of that fullback stuff. He can put his hand on the ground. He comes from Ohio State. He can flex out. And then my second guy is a guy not a lot of guys like, and I love him. It's Jerry Wiley out of TCU. Really, really, really like him. I love his skill set. He's 6'6". He's 253. 47 receptions this year for 520 yards. Length, height, ball skills, a lot of receiver-type ball skills, a lot of receiver-type spatial awareness. Again, I've seen him run some rocket routes off screens. I've seen him run some great corner routes, over routes, really, really good in the red zone, and a really good athlete. Again, a guy who can put his hand on the ground, but he's not as violent inside with his ability to block. But he's a guy who can give you that, you know, and you think about the Browns. Browns don't do a ton of kill ya zone in terms of the edge. It's outside zone. So really that tight end has to get to the second level on the counter, the second level on power, and either drive or hook that that defensive end in zone. So it's not like that tight end compared to their guards has to be a killer. It's nice because it sets an attitude, but this guy is a big physical athlete. I love him, and I think he's a guy who'll be around. And like Tim said, with the numbers, you know, watching him on film, I just think he has a lot of upside in terms of what he can give the Browns in the red zone. And the Browns don't need a ton, right? So again, they can be picky and choosy. This is a guy that can develop, but maybe he can help them right now going 12 personnel, right? You go 12 personnel, now you're in a run set, but now you have Njoku and Wiley who are both big physical guys. Now you get the defense in regular personnel, and he's got a Sam Backer on him, which is a mismatch. So there's a lot you can do with a big tight end on the other side of Njoku in terms of 12 personnel, which again, for the Browns could be 2x2 doubles, or it could be a power run set. So a lot of flexibility. I really like Wiley. I like him as much as I like any of the other tight ends, obviously, besides Bowers.
All right, so Tim, what do you think of those two, Kate Stover and Jared Wiley?
Obviously, you know, watching a lot more Ohio State than TCU, I'm a very big Kate Stover guy. I mean, not just because of the nickname Farmer Gronk. That's a great nickname, and he kind of plays up to that, you know, just incredibly tough. He's a better receiver than I think people give him credit for. And I think, you know, the biggest thing for me with Stover, why he could fit this team, he's a better blocker right now than most tight ends, you know, when they come in the NFL. There's a lot of, you know, tight ends when you do a lot of scouting reports on these guys coming in. The most common thing you see on some of these guys is they need to learn how to block better. That's not an issue with Cade Stover. We know he can block. He's done it for several years at Ohio State, continued to kind of refine himself. And so there's a lot to like about Cade Stover. Maybe, you know, kind of third round option. I personally think he's closer to Jatavion Sanders than, you know, maybe some of the mock drafts kind of have him on the prospect ranking is, because I will admit I'm a big Cade Stover guy. And I mean, Browns fans, they love their Buckeyes. And, you know, Cade Stover, a guy, young man of Lexington, Ohio, just outside Mansfield. That'd be another nice homecoming pick if Andrew Berry wanted to make it.
All right, speaking of Ohio State, guys, before we move on to our football insider questions, I do want to talk about the top of the draft, someplace where the Browns obviously are not going to be playing this year. Marvin Harrison, of course, has long been thought as, you know, this is the guy that's going to be the top receiver in this draft. But, of course, as the draft tends to do, Malik Nabers has started to put himself in the discussion. A lot of what you're hearing people saying is, you know, Marvin Harrison is the guy. I almost feel it's like, if you want Amari Cooper, Marvin Harrison's your guy. He's going to catch footballs. He's going to put up, he's going to be reliable. He's going to be really good. He's a number one receiver, predictable, all of that. If you're looking for a little sizzle though, maybe you'd rather go with Malik Nabers. And it feels, Tim, like Malik Nabers is starting to gain some momentum, at least in some draft experts' eyes, as the number one receiver in this class. I still think for the most part it's Marvin Harrison, but I'm seeing Nabers get mentioned a lot more. What are your thoughts on kind of how this is developing with these two?
There's a term I'm going to use to describe this that I could say the same thing when it comes to the Drake May versus Jane Daniels thing, and it's called draft fatigue. And at some point, you get sick of talking about the same guys over and over again. You know, it's like you want the shiny new toy. Any person, you know, for example, you know, any person that has a car, all of a sudden you see a brand new one and you're like, ooh, I kind of want that. Then you look at your car and you're like, what's wrong with you? And it could be the nicest thing you have, but you're always attracted by the shiny new thing. And I'm not saying this as a slight to Malik Nabers. I love Malik Nabers. You know, I look at him as a guy who can win in all three levels of the defense, short, intermediate, deep. You know, he's got athletic ability. He can jump. He's got speed. He has, you know, precision in his game. And he and Jane Daniels were tremendous together for the last couple of seasons at LSU. But for me, with Marvin Harrison Jr., I mean, he's just so complete as a receiver. I mean, you just watch any Ohio State game for the last two seasons. He made some ridiculous catches along the sidelines, particularly from C.J. Stroud. You know, he threw so many precision balls that Harrison was literally going to be the only guy who could touch the football, and he made some of those catches. And he really did a lot to elevate Kyle McCord through the season. And you saw some of those inconsistencies that Harrison kind of masked, that kind of, you know, bore out in the bowl game, where Ohio State's offense really just could get nothing going. And for me, I've said it all along, the only reason Marvin Harrison won't go top three, and right now probably not top four, he doesn't play quarterback. That's pretty much, to me, the only thing that's keeping him from being one of those top three or four picks is simply the position he plays.
Yeah, Lance, when I look at the two, and look, none of this is to say anything bad about Malik Nabers, but it's just with Marvin Harrison, you know, you go back, you mentioned the CJ Stroud year, Tim, you go back to that Georgia game, and what does everybody say? If Marvin Harrison would have been in that game, Ohio State finishes that off, they win the game, and they probably go on and win a national title. That's how important Marvin Harrison was, even with a guy like CJ Stroud, who has come into the league and become one of the best young quarterbacks in the game. And then with Kyle McCord, He's not getting drafted top five anytime soon. So, but look what Marvin Harrison was able to do with him. So, and the other thing too, Lance, that stands out to me is this is a guy, he didn't need to play a single snap this last season and he would have been a top five pick, but he's out there. He hurt his ankle at one point. He was talking about blocking. This guy is a pro ready receiver. It's why he's not doing any of the testing stuff. He wants to just come in and be a pro. I think Marvin Harrison is still a no-brainer here. I would take him because I know exactly what he's going to be for me. Like, I can write it in Sharpie for the next 10 years, exactly what Marvin Harrison's going to be. What do you think of kind of how this debate is developing?
Well, I think it's great. I think draft fatigue is a great thing, right? You hear over and over what they can't do. And, you know, for everybody, I really think, even before all the thing, I think Nabers is close just because of his ability to – he's a sudden guy, right? So when I think of him, I think of Jamar Chase. And what I mean by that, it's not because they went to the same place. It's the ability, you know, for the first 8 weeks of the season, as a rookie, Ja'Marr Chase ran three routes. He ran a slant, he ran a hitch, and he ran a fade. He ran three routes, and they made it work because of his athletic ability. The only thing that's why I like Malik Nabers. Not necessarily better than Harrison Jr., just the idea of, you know, for a receiver, like, you know, for Harrison to get the ball, quarterback's got to be really good, the protection's got to be really good. And as a play caller, sometimes you just like a guy who could just catch it, and you don't have to do much with it. And that's what Malik Nabers gives to you. Now, if you're in a system, obviously the NFL, so it's obviously a little bit different in my view here, but I just think Malik Nabers is so sudden and twitchy and electric and can play both outside and in the slot and do a bunch of things. Obviously, outside, Harrison is going to be very much like a Cooper, right? He's going to be a guy who's going to be consistent for a long time. You know, I don't know how he's going to be either of them are going to be in terms of now they're going against. They've just been better. So when you've just been better, sometimes there's like a little like a lull until you get back into the swing of things where you realize how good you are. And you can get, I think, to be honest with you, I think Harrison will be better later. But I think early on, Nabers will be better because he won't have to do much. He'll just get touches on quick screens and things like that because that's what he does really well. But down the line, I know he's a pro, but it's that idea of every single day and every game he's going against a guy. You know, if you go back to like the Notre Dame game, you know, sometimes when you go against those good corners, you can win some, you lose some. So he's going to see that every day. Whereas Nabers, you can hide the slot, get him on a backer, get him on a safety. There's some things you can do with Nabers, both outstanding, both, you know, are just, I think, going to be outstanding pros. But in terms of sudden and twitchy and who I like to watch and who I'd like to throw to, I like Nabers. I really do. I think he's Ja'Marr Chase-like.
Okay, let's get to some football insider questions. I got three of them here for you guys, and this, I think, is a really good one, and this might be a position that we have to cover here in the next couple weeks. Kevin in Loveland, Colorado, wouldn't it be wise to get some running back depth in the draft, and is there someone that intrigues you for the Browns' zone blocking scheme? And Tim, if I'm not mistaken, you've sort of been preaching about running back as a potential option for the Browns this draft.
Yeah, and I think it's not even necessarily just, you know, upgrading necessarily from a tandem, you know, with potentially upgrading on what you have with Jerome Ford and Pierre Strong. But you also have to consider, you know, Nick Chubb's coming off a significant knee injury. He had to have two surgeries. You know, we might not come back till, you know, the second half of the season. And even then, he's close to turning 30. So you might want, you're going to have to start thinking about the future of the running back position, maybe the heir apparent. And this is a draft where there's some good running backs that I really like. I am a big, big Jonathan Brooks fan from Texas. You know, kind of like Nick Chubb right now. He's coming off a torn ACL, but he should be ready to go for training camp. Phil came in, you know, stepped up for Bijan Robinson when he went to the NFL this past season and had a good season. You know, 1,139 yards, 10 touchdowns. You know, he's got vision, patience, and he knows how to hit the hole, and he can turn on the speed when he does. And, you know, again, like I said, with the running backs, what do you have right now? You can afford to be patient. You can afford to wait a little bit for Jonathan Brooks to get to 100%. You can, you know, give him – there's a lot of runway because you already have veteran backs in there with Ford, with Strong, with Nyheim Hines. You can get some carries in there as well until Chubb gets back. You have room to get him healthy. You have room to get him 100%. We know guys with the torn ACL, they, you know, maybe need that full year after the injury to get back to 100%. So maybe you get Brooks ready to go and prepare him for 2025. But he's a guy that really just sticks out to me.
Lance, what do you think about adding a running back in the draft?
Well, you know, there's two things. One is, you know, it's kind of misleading. I'm breaking down the Browns film every game, every play offensively. They're becoming just as much a gap team as they are a zone team. And what that tells you is that the guy's got to be pretty versatile. So in terms of, do they want a pounder, a guy who a first and second guy, you know, for me, a guy, Allen Kidd out of Wisconsin, I think he's fantastic. I think Blake Corum, Michigan's fantastic. Isaac Guerriendo out of Louisville, he's a big kid who can run downhill. He's a 1 foot in the ground zone kind of runner. So I think a guy who really fits and does a lot, even though it's estimated, the kid out of Notre Dame, I think he does a lot of things really, really well. It depends on what they want. Do they want a guy? I think the best all-around guy in terms of what the Browns are trying to do with Watson, I think is Blake Corum. He's tough. He can run zone. He can run counter. He pass protects pretty well. Again, he's a guy who comes out of a huddle. He understands double play calls. He understands pass protection. He's not one simple pass protection at Michigan. He's got pickup backers and safeties, and he's got to understand at a different level than some of those college kids do, coming from a Harbaugh offense where they're in the huddle a little bit more, personnel groups a little bit more. He understands, you know, some of these guys come out of college and they've never run to a tight end side. That's a big difference as running to a two-man side. And all they know is zone, and gap is a lot different. You got to let gap things happen. And just think about how many times you've seen the guards pull, right? You're going to see those guys, Teller and Betonio, pulling. They like to do a lot of that. So I really think that Blake Corum is a great fit all around. I love the Allen kid. He doesn't have a lot of tread on his tires. You know, kid out of Wisconsin, they, you know, didn't overrun him like some of those backs. And estimate, I think he'd be, you know, he's a guy who is pretty talented, not a fast guy. He'll slide because of his 40 time, but I think he's another guy who's really, really talented. And the Browns, I'll say it over and over, the Browns got to get the second four more. Browns got to get, you know, they don't need to have home runs all the time. They have guys that can do that. They need second four. They need guys who pick up a Mike Backer on third and six. They need a guy who can run screens very well. You know, they got to have a pretty versatile guy in what they're doing, because they're very versatile offense now. It's zone, it's gap, it's screens, it's pass protection, it's the whole nine yards out of those backs. So I think it's by committee, but if I had to go with one, I'd go with Blake Corum.
Okay, next question here from Terry Richards in Peoria, Arizona. How do you think the revised kickoff rules will impact draft evaluations for wide receivers with return skills experience? And I think these new kickoff rules are going to have a huge impact, not just in guys returning the football, but I think we saw it this week with the Browns going out and signing a Pro Bowl special teams player. Gunners are going to be super important. So getting guys as undrafted free agents and guys at the bottom of that draft who can come in and contribute on special teams coverage is going to be enormous, because you're going to have to really be able to cover kicks with these new rules. Do you think that factors in here to the decision-making process, Tim, with some of these receivers? Maybe not the guy you take in the second round, but maybe if you are taking a sixth or seventh round guy, could that be a differentiator, return ability?
Maybe. And I think it, you know, depends on, you know, how comfortable you feel if you need another guy besides Nyheim Hines, you know, to return kickoffs or whatever. Again, maybe, you know, you want to fill out, you know, that fifth, sixth, seventh round area. Maybe that's a good time to get the special team, because again, three of their five picks right now are outside the top 150. So that feels like prime territory to kind of go around the board, find a special teamer. But, you know, another good option to put alongside, you know, Nyheim Hines could be interesting as a returner, because again, you know, in that landing zone, you can have up to two guys back there who could just move around all over the place. And in some ways, the new rule makes the kickoffs into like essentially glorified running play. So maybe it would almost be even better to, if you could find a running back that could kind of fill that role instead of just a receiver, or maybe, you know, a twitchy receiver, you know, a guy like a Malik Washington for Virginia could really fit if you're looking for that type of, you know, receiver slash returner combination. But maybe, like I said, you know, running back feels like kind of, if that's where you're going to go for a returner, that would be interesting. But skill player as a returner, you know, a late round pick flyer or priority UDFA, that'd be an interesting way. That'd be an interesting option.
Yeah, Lance, I know you've been watching, you know, some XFL kickoffs and sort of how this thing is going to look. Would you, if you were looking at two guys, again, maybe it's late day three, would you favor a guy who could maybe be a spark in the return game with these new rules?
Well, I'll tell you what. So you look at the kickoff return, and it has been dead for a long time, right? Browns had 20 total returns last year. That's all they had. Think about that. They only had 20 returns total. So this is a huge thing, because first of all, that kick, no one can move until the ball is caught. So what you're going to see, in my opinion, is that now this is, Tim, you said it best, it's a glorified run play. So now you're going to get in big situations, you're going to get guys who are back, because guys aren't back on kickoff because the kickoff team is coming down there with their hair on fire. They're 230-pound guys who are running at 4-4. Now that's not the case. Now you're getting this close. They're taking away the collision. So when you take away the collision part of this, now it's a run play. So you're going to see, I think you're going to see big names back there. You're going to see in the playoffs, you're going to see Christian McCaffrey back there if it's 7-7 in the third quarter. Why? Because it's a run play. And it's not a collision play anymore. And that is going to change. So you got to have guys that can cover. So now, as a coach, I was always looking for guys who had zero, you know, zero respect for their body, and they were going down to just lay it all out there. Now you got to find guys that can get off blocks. You got to have more linebacker types. You got to have their corners, the Martin Emersons who can get off blocks. You can't just have guys, because what ends up, why kickoffs are really hard to return is that those kickoff teams, they just avoid. We always work dip and avoid, so it's really hard to block. This is a totally different football play now. This is a time that you're going to see, I'm not kidding you, you're going to see major names, especially in key situations, that are going to be back, especially if they haven't had tons of touches. I'm talking running backs, receivers, guys who are good with the ball, and it's going to be the big names, because this is, they've taken the collision. You know, now it's, now the injury factor, in my opinion, is the same as all the other plays, which means they'll be out there. And you're going to see they better have guys that can cover. They better have guys who can block. It's going to be a totally different – it's a game changer in terms of how a coach is going to prepare. I will tell you that.
Okay, we are going to take one more break here, and then when we come back, we're going to do it again. Listen, sometimes it was awkward. Sometimes it was a little clunky, but it was fun. We're going to do a mock draft on the other side here. Welcome back to the Orange and Brown Talk podcast, our draft edition of the podcast. Dan Lobby with Tim Bielik and Lance Reisland. Okay, it is time. We are going to do a mock NFL draft here. We're going to do Browns picks. We're only going to go through the fourth round here on this mock draft. So we are using Pro Football Network today. We'll try to use a different system each time. I'm going to make sure I have all my settings right here. And we are going to go ahead and enter the draft. And it is moving along, scrolling along here. We're about to finish up the first round. I picked fast, so we should get there pretty quickly. And here we go. The Browns on the clock at number 54. We're not doing trades. We just got a trade offered to us by the Las Vegas Raiders. We're not going to get into that. We're not going to do any trades right now. So I'm going to reject that. Tim and Lance, you can see my screen. So as I'm scrolling through here, this is interesting. Michael Penix somehow is still available. I don't think that's going to happen, but he is still on the board. I'm going to scroll through here, and if you guys see an intriguing name or two, there's Michael Hall, actually, which I think is a kind of interesting name, and I believe the Browns either have had him in for a visit or are going to have him in for a visit. I think defensive tackle is very interesting for the Browns. There's our guy, Xavier Leggett from South Carolina. He is still available. There's a running back in Jonathan Brooks. So as I'm scrolling through here, there's Roman Wilson. Anybody stand out to you on this list, Tim, that you're kind of seeing that you want to pound the table for here with pick number 54?
I'm torn between the two defensive tackles, Michael Hall Jr. and Chris Jenkins. You know, those are different guys right now, as I think. Whenever healthy, Michael Hall was an impact player. He's just a true disruptor, really good in the pass game, you know, getting after the quarterback. Probably needs to get a little stronger, needs to hold up better, you know, against the run. And I think Chris Jenkins is kind of the opposite guy. I think he's a guy who, you know, he's an enormous athlete. I've talked before in Sports or CLE. If you've ever heard of a Turkish getup, which is a weird, awkward athletic movement with a dumbbell, he did it with like 150, 160 some pounds, which is absolutely incredible. He could only do it probably 25 pounds, but but it goes to show just Jenkins is an unbelievable athlete. He's so good against the run, kind of needs to work on his pass rush repertoire a little bit, but considering, you know, I feel like D tackle is in some ways a pseudo redshirt position for rookies, that's, you know, not as much of a problem. So I mean, obviously we're not going to trade down. I feel like this would be a board prime to trade down six spots, see if you could get an extra third round pick. But yeah, between those two, I'm just torn, because it's kind of like, do you want a guy who's better with against the pass because you took a more, you know, traditional nose tackle type in Siaki Ika, or do you want the more athletic guy who, you know, you already know he's going to have an impact immediately as a run stopper, but over time, you know, you hope he could develop into a legitimate pass rusher and has NFL bloodlines.
So, Lance, one of the things that I think the Browns have been unable to do to this point is draft a really young, you know, cost-controlled contributor on that defensive line. Now, I've always looked at edge rusher as like, go get Myles Garrett, who you're paying $125 million to. Go get him a cost-controlled partner for 4 years, 5 years if it's a first-round pick. Go get that guy. Obviously, when you don't have first-round picks, that's harder to do. I think defensive tackle is another area where I would love to see the Browns make an investment with some real draft capital here. I like that room. You know, obviously Dalvin Tomlinson was really good last year. I like what Mo Hurst and Shelby Harris did in their specific roles. But we know that Shelby Harris is a year older. We know that Mo Hurst gets hurt a lot. I don't know what Siaki Ika is going to be. We'll see. Maybe he takes the Alex Wright arc and he becomes a contributor in year two. Or maybe it's just not going to end up working. I love the idea of taking one of these defensive tackles here.
So let me ask you a question. Where I have a couple guys. Can we find out where a couple guys are? Where's Travion Sweat? Kid from Texas.
Okay, let me see.
Devondre Sweat, I'm sorry.
All right, all good.
I think he's been taken.
Yeah, he's off the board there, unfortunately. Yep.
Okay, yeah, I'm searching here. I don't see him.
What about Peyton Wilson? He's my draft crush, by the way.
He's on the board.
He's on the board. So I am without question. I know people do not like his everything you said about defensive tackle. If I'm going with Tim, I'm going with Chris Jenkins because inside. I also think Braylon Trice because he came in at 245. People backed off on him. But remember, the defensive tackle now in Schwartz's defense is a lot different than it is in most defenses, right? He's got to be a guy who's flexible, complete three technique, can do some different stuff. But I will tell you, since Ivan Pace, this is the best breakdown that I've done as a linebacker. Now, he had shoulder issues. He had an ACL issues. But that last 2 years, he's been pretty healthy. 138 tackles, 17 and a half tackles for a loss, 6 sacks. The idea, he ran a 4.440 at the combine, 34 and a half vertical leap, 119 broad jump. Peyton Willis is the most devastating linebacker on film that I have watched in years. So if I was persuaded, if I'm going tackle, I'm going Jenkins. But I think Peyton Wilson is a guy, if he's on the board, if you think about the Browns' age at linebacker, what they like to do coverage-wise, you're talking about two guys with him and JOK that are sub 4.5 guys, and Wilson's 233. I don't know, 6'4", 233. I absolutely, I'll get off my soapbox here, but I'm a big Peyton Wilson fan. As you can see.
I do this just to break Lance's heart every year. That's really the reason. This is just to just absolutely crush Lance as much as possible. I don't think we're going linebacker here, Tim. I really think I love the idea of one of these defensive tackles. And, you know, obviously Lance put in his 2 cents there for for Chris Jenkins. I would be fine with either guy. Are we good going Chris Jenkins here?
Yeah, I'd say so. I'm big on NFL bloodlines. I am very big on that. And to kind of piggyback off Peyton Wilson, if I may briefly, you know, I agree with Lance. You know, as far as film goes, he's as good as there is. My concern and why I think the Browns won't touch him, he turns 24 before the draft. Old guy, and we know Andrew Berry, I mean, the stats have bared it out for 4 years. He avoids drafting older guys at all costs. And it's unfortunate for Lance. I know he's taken a couple of victory laps on Ivan Pace, well-deserved, but I think in this case, I would go with Jenkins. Although between the linebackers, they also showed Edward Cooper from A&M. Their size and speed to complement JOK if you're going two linebackers.
Yeah, if not for Kwesi, if not for Andrew Berry's buddy, Lance, who knows? It could have happened here in Cleveland, but he stole him. All right.
You two are not talking. Listen, I've been doing this a while with you guys. You guys aren't taking me off Wilson this year.
All right. That's fine. We're listen, not... we got a few more of these mock drafts to do.
One time you'll give it to me.
Convictions are a good thing, you know. I'm with you right there.
Well, I turned in the card. Car's been turned in. We went with Chris Jenkins. Again, Kansas City, appreciate the trade offer. We're not doing trades right now. Okay, so we are looking at the number 85 overall pick in round 3. There's Blake Corum. I know there's a guy that you liked, Lance. I'm going to scroll through and see if I can find any of the names that we had discussed. But Tim or Lance, if you see a name that you want to say, stop, let's take that guy. Go ahead and shout it out. And it could be Corum. It could be any of these names that we're seeing as we kind of go through this list here. You know, the wide receiver group is a little – we're not really seeing a ton there right now. Tim, there's Cade Stover. Tim, do you have somebody?
Well, the guy we saw at the top was Jalen McMillan from Washington, kind of the lesser known, you know, maybe the lesser pedigree of the three guys, but, you know, maybe kind of a diet, you know, Jalen Polk. Not as big a guy, but fluid, you know, not going to be an ultimate athlete. But I think what he's just so fluid, and he understands how to create space for himself. He's interesting to me, you know, just because, you know, again, may not be the ultimate athlete, but, you know, guys that understand space are really good. And also, more NFL bloodlines, Jeremiah Trotter Jr. from Clemson is sitting right there, you know, smaller guy, but I mean, who wouldn't want to have, you know, the younger versions of Chris Jenkins and Jeremiah Trotter on their defenses? I mean, again, NFL bloodlines matter. Trotter's an extremely smart player, athletic. I'm just looking at my scouting report when I wrote about the linebackers way back, you know, at the beginning of the cycle. Incredible IQ, coverage ability. You know, he had 2 interceptions, 15 tackles for loss. He could play all over the field, true 3-down linebacker. But I think, you know, for the Browns, fits a just be a concern just because then you'd have 2 shorter linebackers. Trotter's 6 foot. Not that it would hinder him. You know, that's the Ivan Pace argument all over again. I think teams would want to redo. But Jeremiah Trotter, man, that's so interesting to me. If, you know, again, bring back those bloodlines and, you know, add those guys to a Jim Schwartz defense, you could have some real fun there.
St. Joe's prep guy, too, I believe, is where he went to high school. So him and Kevin can hang out and talk about St. Joe's prep if they want. Lance, you heard those names that Tim threw out. Do you like either of those guys, or is there somebody else that you like on this list that you really want to say, let's go get this guy?
Can we where's Tyler Newbin? Is he gone? I'm sure he's gone, right? If he's not gone, then I want Tyler Newbin.
Let's see what we got.
Yeah, looks like it.
Yeah, he is gone.
Okay, all right.
I think he's like he's a second-round guy, I think.
Okay. I'm huge because once again, this defense is like a unicorn, right? So that safety has got to be a linebacker type or a one. He's got to be. So I'm huge on Tyler Newbin. Trotter, I like. You know, I think Blake Corum for what they need, and not the health. I think it's got to be Trotter or it's got to be Blake Corum. I also like Braylon Allen. I think he's, and I like the fact that he doesn't have a lot of tread. I don't know. I don't know, you know, where they go. I will not take a linebacker. I will go with the team. I will go with the team. But there's something wrong. But I will go with the team here. I'm a team player for sure.
I like the idea of Jeremiah Trotter, and I do, as much as we talk about running back as a need here, I don't know that they would draft a running back in this spot to fill a need. If that makes sense. I think it would have to be a guy that they believe is like that best player available in this spot. I don't know that they're going to make themselves draft a running back. So I could live with Trotter in this spot.
Yeah, and of the running backs, you know, I like Braylon Allen. I would like to see if Audric Estime is still there, because for me, he seems like a David Montgomery clone, you know.
Yes, he is.
Oh, he's there. Yeah, not too. I mean, that again, that might be a reach for a guy who's not going to be a bell cow. I think he's a, you know, 1B. You know, he works well in a tandem, but man, oh man, just he has an explosive run rate in college, similar, pretty much slightly higher than Nick Chubb in college. Doesn't have breakaway speed, you know, fast enough, elusive enough. You know, there's been some Le'Veon Bell comps. The one I like the most is David Montgomery. And what NFL team wouldn't love to have a David Montgomery in its backfield? Could you imagine, you know, until Nick Chubb gets back, you know, a Jerome Ford and David Montgomery clone to kind of be a tandem while Nick Chubb gets healthy?
Yeah, I still just don't. I feel like, I don't know. I'm just not feeling running back here still. It's hard for me to talk myself into running back.
Well, I mean, this is the position the Browns have put themselves in, that they can, you know, go 7 different ways because the roster is so deep and they can really go pseudo BPA. And again, you know, Trotter makes sense because you're looking for, you know, another long-term option at linebacker. I know they just signed Jordan Hicks, but, you know, just there's turnover in that room a little bit. You're probably going to lock in JOK to a long-term extension in the near future, I would presume, because he's in the last year of his rookie contract. Maybe Trotter makes a lot of sense, and a guy who can be attack minded. And if you're going to play two linebackers, they better be able to move and they better be smart. And Trotter can move and he's very smart.
Yeah. And we have seen, now this is a position that even though the Browns, you know, their relationship with linebackers has always been iffy, they have taken linebackers high, right? Obviously JOK was a second, Jacob Phillips was a third. So this is a team that will take line. I think they do really value that position. That said, I think we're good Let's bring in the St. Joe's prep bloodline here. Let's let Kevin have somebody on that defense that he can connect with, and bring in Jeremiah Trotter with that pick as our simulation continues on through this fourth round, which of course completes our draft for the Cleveland Browns. We only did two picks today. Maybe what we'll do is we'll extend this a little bit on a little bit of a time crunch here, though, so we couldn't go too deep into the draft. But listen, if we're sitting there on Friday night, Tim, and it's Chris Jenkins and Jeremiah Trotter, what are you writing about this draft?
You know, this feels like a typical Andrew Berry draft. You know, he maybe not he leans more defensively in these drafts, but you know, guys that you know, in particular Jeremiah Trotter could fill in a role right now in special teams as a rotational linebacker, maybe become that, you know, Robin next to JOK's Batman because of the way Trotter covers, and then Chris Jenkins, you know, he could be that answer you're looking for at defensive tackle. I think he's a much better athlete than Siaki Ika. I think he's got a more well-rounded game, you know, than Ika, who I think still has the potential to be a solid, you know, run stuffing defensive tackle. But Jenkins has true three down potential because he is one pound for pound one of the best athletes of this entire draft class. And again, I'll say it's all in blue in the face. NFL bloodlines matter to me.
Lance, what's your text to me, Mary Kay, and Ashley reading Friday night if this is the draft?
Well, it tells me this. Just like we did, we all had some different views here, and I think I agree with Tim in terms of the Browns are now going to go with what they decide, right? So you just said it too. I don't see, you know, Dan, you said, I don't see them going running back here in the age. So now they get to decide not on need, but what they like and what they value in their breakdowns. So if it's Chris Jenkins, first of all, I think he's a solid pro. So there's a room in every NFL defensive line for a solid pro, a guy who's going to be strong, anchor at the point of attack, and that's what he's doing. If it's Jeremiah Trotter, once again, I'm okay with that because of his ability to run and the defense he played in. I think they do need to address the running back, and I think they do need to make sure that they find guys who can make a difference, special teams. That's the only thing. They can't have too many guys who are developmental. They still need some guys who can make some plays. But the text would be, I'm okay with Chris Jenkins. He's a stud inside for sure.
Okay, there we go. We did it. Our first draft podcast here on the board with Tim Bielik and Lance Reisland. You can find all of their coverage, of course, at cleveland.com/Browns. I know we talked about it a little bit off the top, but just one more time, Tim, this is going to run on Friday. So what can people find that you've put up? Or what do you have coming?
My first round mock of this year. I'm going to focus a lot on who I'm going to call the Dos Equis man of the draft, the most interesting man of the draft. And that's JJ McCarthy. He's become the most interesting guy in this draft. You know, just the fact that, you know, people are talking about him, you know, potentially going as high as second overall in this draft. And, you know, people are connecting him and the Minnesota Vikings and Kwesi. Could he move up and, you know, take the former Michigan quarterback? So I think those are things you can look for in my mock draft later this week.
And Lance, I know you've had some film posts you're working on. What can people see from you?
You're going to see first three guys who I think the Browns make sense at pick 54, which is kind of funny. The first pick will be my choice. You guys will it will make both of you smile. Later in the week, I'm going to talk about the effect I think that Bush and Hicks will have in terms of being thumpers and being a little bit bigger and having a role in there. And then I'm going to talk safeties because I still think the Browns are going to need a safety, and I think they need a guy like Tyler Newbin who can – doesn't have to necessarily be him, but a guy with similar skill set in terms of being able to play down in the box like Delpit and the one high hat like Thornhill. So those three things is kind of what I'm going with in the next week here or so.
All right, great stuff as always. You can find all that at cleveland.com/Browns, which is also where you can become a Football Insider subscriber. It's the blue banner at the top of the page. I always tell you about our Instagram page. Find us on Orange and Brown Talk, and also our YouTube page, Cleveland Browns on cleveland.com. Tim and Lance, this was fun. Let's do it again next week.